I'm holding on to you right from here on in. You wanna bet you'll slough me off, and I'll beg till you soften, and 10-1 I'll win. You wanna bet on me, call me a pest, but quite strangely you'll be impressed. It's destiny then, by and by you and I will be we. What a great duet, you wait and see, oh, hold on to me.
Once upon a time in Laguna Beach, there were two artists. They each had their own style, their own homes and families, their own workspaces. One specialized in impressionistic landscapes, the other in figurative portraiture. And one day one timidly went to the other and said, "Would you like to collaborate?" And the other said, "No," at first, but was gradually convinced to at least give it a try. And thus, duets was formed. And here on this The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on KX935 are those two collaborating artists, Stephanie Cunningham and Betty Haight, that's Haight spelt H-A-I-G-H-T, of Cunningham Haight, to tell us the whole story. It's a good one. Betty Haight, the one who approached Stephanie, had no art training before she became a professional painter. She was a criminal lawyer. Stephanie Cunningham had pursued art all her life as both a painter and a teacher of art. So it was with trepidation that Betty approached Stephanie with her idea of creating a painting together.
I was collaborating with another figurative painter in town, Kathy Jones, and we'd paint on the same canvas. We'd pass it back and forth. So one of us would start and then I'd take it, she'd start, I'd take it back and forth. And so we painted that way for several years, and we were in the Sawdust Festival with our collaborative work. And then on the third year, Kathy's husband was having some surgery, and she felt like she shouldn't be in either show. She was going to take care of him that summer. So she said, "Well, why don't you paint with Stephanie?" And so I thought, "Well, that's a good idea, you know." So I go tripping over to say, "Well, Stephanie, you know, I need a new collaborative partner. What? Well, let's go, you know." And she said,
I said, "I don't see how that's going to work. You and Kathy have a good thing going there, and I don't see how I could fit into that at all." And then I went home and I thought, you know, Betty's a pretty smart cookie. She's always doing all these creative things, and wouldn't that be kind of a bad move on my part if I gave up this opportunity just to see what it's going to be like? So that's when I said, "Okay, we'll try it." That's when we had that show at the Spirit Lake Art Center, Your Independent Figures in My Landscape, two-woman show in Iowa. And I said, "So why don't we try it there? Then if we're embarrassed about our pieces, it's in Iowa." And then we had how many? 8 or 10 duets.
We had 7, and then Nelson shipped the 2 from the movie.
Wait a minute, from what movie? So here's where the plot thickens in the saga of these two Laguna Beach artists, Betty Haight and Stephanie Cunningham, a saga they're about to relate to us here on tonight's Sharon Hour. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's one and only listener-supported, member-supported public FM radio station, KX935. You heard Stephanie's casual mention of the fact that they had to ship a couple of their paintings from a movie to support their show in Iowa. So how were their paintings suddenly in movies when Stephanie hadn't even quite committed to this collaboration that became known as duets? Here's Betty Haight to reveal the details of their serendipitous start.
It was January, I remember, and a Sunday night, and I had the studio kind of closed up, and there came a knock at the door, and this really handsome guy was there, and he said, "Can I come in?" And I thought, because it's kind of scary, you know.
But he was handsome.
Very good looking guy. He smiled. He had a good smile. So I said, "Sure," and he came in. He said, "Well, I'm visiting your neighbor, Ruben, and he's not home yet," which was typical. Ruben's always late for everything. So that was believable. You know, he convinced me. And so he came in. He said, "Oh, I just like art. Can I just look around?" And I said, "Sure." And so he looks around the whole studio. And this was at the very beginning when we were just first starting thinking about duets, and Stephanie had begrudgingly decided that she would try two. So we selected a canvas sizes, and we decided we'd paint them in neutral colors so that we had some ground rules, because we had never done this before. So she brought them over, and I put them together on my studio floor. So these pieces are down on the floor, kind of not in a prominent spot, and kind of looks at him for a while, and he said, "Could you ship those to Boston on Monday?" And I said, "Well, who are you?" No, I didn't say that, but I said, "No, we're just kind of deciding if this is something," and I explained we were trying to ship these back to Iowa for a show we were doing, and I said, "Well, I don't see how that'd work," and he said, "Well, do you have a computer?" And I said, "Well, not down here, up in my house." And he wrote down his name, and he said, "Google me." So I said, "Okay," and I went up and put in Nelson Coates. Credits started pouring out, and he was a very, very famous production designer. I even recognized some of the movies. So then I said, "Yes, sir." I think Stephanie will agree to this.
Yeah, they bring our work to L.A. They kept sending these enormous trucks to pick up like 4 30 by 30 paintings or something from LA to film. They pay you a fee per painting.
It's a good, reasonable fee.
Not much. Yeah, 100. You know, I can't remember.
But in the hundreds rather than thousands.
Not much. This is just part of the set decoration. They have all the furniture.
That's right. They have
the books. They have the tablecloths. Everything is thought out. So our little paintings on the wall.
But it's a lovely little press thing for you,
yes.
Right?
So then in The Young and the Restless, they did this a number of times, and they had one very large piece in Lauren's office. Lauren was one of the characters. Then they'd ship it back because something happened to Lauren. You know, usually in the soap opera, somebody dies and then you don't see them anymore. I could never watch it all the way through. But my sister-in-law would watch it and say, "Oh, today you had three pieces in Lauren's office." So we had this very large piece, and then during the festival, we sold it. They were just rented. We didn't have any commitment there. So then the next year, they called and said, "Oh, we've brought Lauren back, and we need that piece." And I said, "Well, that piece is living in Irvine now."
Uh-oh.
And so Lauren will just have to change her decor for the office. And they decided then to purchase all of the pieces.
They did rent that piece back, though. Those people had it from Palm Desert, and they went out there and picked that piece up and rented it back from them.
And rented it, and then
uh-huh,
brought it back.
Right.
But then they decided to purchase.
Then they did purchase ours. But we've been in like 5 movies.
The Guilt Trip with Barbara Streisand.
Right.
And Unforgettable, which you can never remember the name of that.
How could you not remember Unforgettable?
They kept changing the name of it. Unforgettable.
It's Unforgettable. And you said, "Yes, but I forgot it."
Unforgettable.
Okay, so those of you who listen to my Sharon Hour frequently, that's with me, Sharon James, on this Laguna's FM station, KX935. Know that I like to punctuate my topics and interviews with the occasional song that relates. And of course, this Unforgettable reference provides the perfect segue to a beautiful song made famous by Nat King Cole, sung here by Natalie Cole, his daughter, as a duet appropriate to the artistic output of my guests on the Sharon Hour tonight, Betty Haight and Stephanie Cunningham. And Natalie Cole is singing the duet with her father, except Nat King Cole has recently died at this point. So she is singing to a recording of his with a slideshow of pictures of her as a baby with her father and growing up. And this images of them together are playing behind this very moving rendering.
Unforgettable. Near or
like a song of love that clings to me. How the thought of you does things to me. Never before has someone been more
unforgettable in every way.
And forevermore.
And forevermore.
That's how you'll stay.
That's how you'll stay. That's why, darling, it's incredible that someone so unforgettable thinks that I am unforgettable too.
The Unforgettable Calls. So let's get back to my guests on tonight's KX935 Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James. Those guests being local Laguna Beach Festival of the Arts artists, Stephanie Cunningham and Betty Haight. They collaborate with paintings they put together. Betty does the figurative portraiture, Stephanie does the impressionistic landscape. They work independently and then join their efforts together. And over the years, they're confident that their paintings, albeit very different from each other, are going to complement each other. Nelson Coates, the prolific and talented production designer, who's now another Laguna Beach fixture, discovered their duets, as they call their collaborative paintings, and rents them out for his movies and TV shows. Stephanie describes one related incident that happened one summer at the Festival of the Arts here in town.
This was a young couple that came from Colorado, and they had seen the movie The Last Song. It was a Nicholas Sparks film, and we had several pieces in a hospital setting. And this was a figure, and then a long piece of mine that had cottages in a row.
Iowa cottages.
And they were familiar with our work, but they saw the film, and they saw the piece in the film, and they came to the festival, and they said, this was a very young couple that didn't have a penny, you know.
He designed t-shirts and she worked in a coffee shop.
Starbucks, I think. Yeah. They had purchased one of our pieces several years ago, yeah. Small little piece, but now they wanted this big one. Now they saw it in the film. And we said, no, you don't have any business buying that. You save your money. And their family was with them. They had like family reunion, and they'd come to the Festival of Art
every summer.
The whole family, yeah. Big family. And so they said, no, they were going to come up with the money and buy the painting. And Betty said, okay, here's the deal. You decide how much money a month that you can send us.
What a good idea.
You make a decision, but whatever you decide, that's it. You know, it's 5, 10, 15, whatever amount of money, and you send us that money every month. You can take the painting home with you, and then you pay it off.
And they paid $35 a month for a year, at least a year. And then the following summer, when the whole family came in, the mother came in and paid it off.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was
so they bought
sweet.
It on the Never Never, as yeah. we say.
So we just love that. Because to us, it isn't, I mean, I love getting paid for the artwork, but it really isn't that. It's really the joy of having somebody relate to what's
absolutely.
Trying to stay. And that's, we've met people from all over the world.
The little girl from India. There was a teenager from India that she was like 14 and she just fell like a ton of bricks for a little paint. This girl, I mean, they were mother and dad and boy and girl, and the girl was 14 and the boy was just entering Claremont College. And the parents, that they'd come over to bring him to Claremont and get him settled. So they were wandering around the festival. This little girl went crazy on a Sunday morning over this little painting.
And it was titled Choose Me.
It was $395, and they didn't have enough American money. So they were like debating about how to do this and how to do that. I said, well, just, you know, give me what you have. I don't care. And so they did.
Where are they from?
Bombay. They were from Bombay. So they gave me, I don't know, it was close to $300. It was whatever. It didn't matter. And then they went home, and we kept in touch for the longest time. The mother was an artist, and she did beautiful silkscreen scarves and clothing. And so she sent us scarves. And father was an executive in a company that lights like airfields. He comes to the United States quite often, so we still see him.
Do you find that a lot with customers that you keep in touch?
They write to us and they relate to maybe the story.
So the story, this is another aspect to Stephanie Cunningham's and Betty Haight's collaborative paintings that they're talking about on tonight's KX935 Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James. Once they've combined Betty's figurative portrait with Stephanie's landscape for their series of duets, Stephanie composes a little story to go with the painting.
My favorite was All My Exes Live in Texas, the title of the painting. And she said, all my exes do live in Texas. I said, but you're not even looking at the painting. She said, I don't care.
A lot of people, story has a big influence in purchasing.
The story started verbally about eight years ago.
Yeah.
So the first couple of years, somebody come in and say, Cunningham Haight. Is that a hyphenated name? What is that all about? And then who's ever there, Betty or I at the festival, would say, no, we're two artists, Betty Haight and Stephanie Cunningham, and we collaborate and we work together, and then we take our little painting off the wall. See, there's two canvases put together, and they'd say, oh, well, what is that map under there? Why is that wallpaper there? What's that all about? And then I'll say, well, this woman, I say I can talk about her because I didn't create her, so I'll say the woman figure, well, she was feeling kind of down and out, and then she looked over at the horizon, and, you know, I'd make up a story. And so later in the evening, maybe when Betty was there, that person would come and drag their friends and say to Betty,
tell them the story. Tell me the story. Well, what I know what story
and
she's
would know
done.
The story.
She's
made
a storyteller.
So they go, well, you told her the story. And Betty go, no, I wasn't here this morning. And then she'd say, you're going to have to write the stories down. So they're really just a paragraph. They're not a lengthy story, but Betty's favorite
is... Yeah, tell them my favorite story.
I don't remember the title. The story was, although she always seemed to get her own way, she never thought of herself as spoiled. And I was thinking Betty thought of somebody she knew.
Oh, you?
For the Young and the Restless, they kept renting our pieces for the different episodes. And one of the titles and one of the stories on one of our duets was, she was young and she was restless.
I love it.
To go back to the inception of this collaborative relationship that spawned duets, which basically started with the joint show in Iowa. It had been a previous time when tonight's KX935 Sharon and our guests, Betty Haight and Stephanie Cunningham, had been in Iowa.
You tell the story.
I love this story.
Well, we lived in northwestern Iowa, which is on the Minnesota-South Dakota border. It's a resort area. It's a bunch of interconnected lakes that were caused by the same glacial action as the lakes of Minnesota. So very beautiful. And my family lives on 80 acres on the lake and kind of wild. And so I was going back to visit my mother, and I invited Stephanie to go with me.
She invited me.
You can paint all day.
I said, I'll have to be going back and forth to the nursing home to see my mom, which was like 30 miles. And you can just stay in the house and paint all day. So we arrived there, and I put tarps down and the easel and her paints, and I just left her there, and she did paint all day. I'd go away, and then she'd fix dinner.
But you were very happy to be indoors all day, because it was freezing out, right?
Oh, I was very happy, and I said I'm not going outdoors, because I had never been in that kind of weather. It was below 30, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was definitely, because you said if it ever gets above freezing, I'll go out, but it didn't.
We had to go to Walmart to buy warm clothes. That's the only thing open in March.
And she loved the Iowa Walmart. You loved the Walmart.
Yeah,
probably because it was your only expedition outside.
It was the only thing outside to go to Walmart. But it was so beautiful there. I mean, I had never, you know, I visited other places, but I was born in San Francisco, raised in Palm Springs, and moved to Laguna Beach. So that's my experience of living. And so when I went to this completely different landscape and spent a whole week just looking and painting it, it really opened me up to a whole different way of painting and simplifying, which was good. I was much more realistic. If you're painting in Laguna, you've got the ocean and you've got the palm trees and you've got the bougainvillea and you've got the people on the beach. But when you go to Iowa, there's just this barren landscape out there between Omaha and Okoboji that I had never really looked at before.
I love fields as far as the eye can see. Mm-hmm. I love barren landscapes.
It was beautiful, and Betty was apologizing because she said, oh, I brought you out here and it's like brown grass and gray sky, and there's nothing to see. And she kept saying as she was driving, do you want to stop and take a photo? Do you want to stop and take a photo? And I kept saying, no, I'm going click, click, click in my head, because neither one of us paint from any material.
You don't ever paint from it. No, you just do
all
it
the paintings come from inside my head of what I've seen. So a lot of those early landscapes that we painted as duets, and even before that, when I was just painting them for myself, and I'd glue a big map down of that world, and then I'd paint these just very simple landscapes and let the map kind of show through some of the oils. And then we decided to kind of continue that technique because you were painting on wallpaper books.
So this is the collage aspect,
the collage
to your paint.
Underneath the oil.
We'll get back to that, but you mentioned something about seeing like dots of red in those landscapes.
Yes, I did tell that story because we're driving along and I was feeling really bad because it was cold and it was very windy, and we stopped at a rest stop, and Steph had to like put on three layers of coats and huddle up in order to go to the potty. And she came back. I said, oh, Steph, I'm so sorry. This really is very ugly. And she said, oh, no, it's so beautiful. And everywhere you look, there's just a dot of red. And I had never really seen that. But there'd be like a workman's sweatshirt hanging over the rail, or there'd be a red tractor. Of course, there are a lot of red barns. And once she pointed it out on that gray landscape, there was just this tick, tick, tick. And that showed up in her work when she came home. And remember, I forgot that until you were just speaking, but the tall houses, there's a place in my hometown for some reason that people built houses on stilts, like not a house to live in, but a playhouse. A tree house, sort of, only on just on stilts. A house on stilts, not in a tree.
To get off the snow?
Oh, who knows? Maybe just because. I don't know. Keep from the animals.
To keep from the snow and the animals.
Yeah, right. Or maybe kids. Just if you can build it, make it. They had a lot of land, so maybe they were just eccentric or something. Yeah. But she saw those, and then those turned up in her work.
We're talking here about the artworks of Betty Haight and Stephanie Cunningham, my guests on tonight's Sharon Hour. That's for me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. Stephanie, a homegrown Californian, has been visiting the wilder, colder part of the country where Betty grew up, on the edge of Minnesota and Iowa.
That was the first trip, when your mother was in the nursing home and you were gone all day to visit her. And then we were invited back to do a big show. Yeah. So we had nine of our, what we call duets, put together, and all the people from Iowa, all around the farms, came out. Yeah. And the show was packed, and all the duets
in
were
March,
sold.
In the sleet storm.
And every duet sold.
And you had originally independently entered this?
Well, this was the Regional Museum and Art Center. Iowa is not normally an art center. They had asked me if I would do a show, because that's my home, my old home, that's where I'm from. And so they had asked me if I would do a show, and I realized that it's an extremely large space and that I couldn't possibly fill it up. And so I asked if I could bring someone else along. And they had seen Stephanie's work earlier because the person that's a curator of the museum had come by my house and had seen some of her work. So I said, well, how about Stephanie? Can we have her? And so they said, fine. So then we both started painting. I was painting my big figures and she was painting landscapes. And so our idea was to have her in her part of the building and me in my part of the building. But then it was, well, this is really awkward. I mean, what's going to tie this together? And we were shipping like 100 pieces. So it was a lot of art. So then it came to me that if we put our paintings together, as you went in, you could have a display of these joint paintings, which we didn't even know to call duets then, but these joint paintings, and then have our individual work off in the side rooms. And so that's basically what happened.
And so this was the inception of the collaboration.
It was.
And I think the duet name came from when you first asked me to collaborate, and I said I didn't think that was such a great idea.
Well, you were worried that I was asking you to paint on the same painting like Kathy
and I said, okay, as long as it's kind of like a piano duet.
Uh-huh.
I said,
you came up with
that
word duet.
You stay on
remember,
your side of the piano, and I stay on mine, and then I'll do it.
They sold first
the opening night.
And then I think some of the work that didn't sell, we left in that gallery. Mm-hmm. Eventually everything.
Yeah, but they were the most popular pieces.
Right,
definitely
the most popular.
You're listening to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. Talking tonight to Laguna Beach artists, Stephanie Cunningham and Betty Haight of Cunningham Haight. If you're Googling them, they're at cunninghamhaight.com, and that's Haight spelt with H-A-I-G-H-T, not the dislike way. How could you hate either of these lovely ladies? Only one of them actually trained as an artist and has worked at it all her life. That's Stephanie. Betty Haight was
an attorney. I was practicing law and doing all those legally things. A criminal lawyer. I was a district attorney in San Bernardino County for 28 years.
Gosh, good for you.
Yeah.
And how about you, Stephanie?
I was an art teacher in high school and junior high in Orange Unified School District and taught for 34 years before I retired. Always lived in Laguna Beach. Bought our house. We were lucky to buy our little house in 1965. It's a little Laguna charmer. We've lived there ever since. My husband was a teacher here in Laguna Beach and taught science. And he started the Pacific Marine Mammal Center here in Laguna Beach in 1971.
Oh.
So he wasn't an artist, but when I started taking art workshops after I had retired, I decided to drag him along. I thought it would be good for him to see this side of him. That's where I met Betty in one of these art workshops. And my husband sat there very patiently trying to do impressionistic art. And Betty and I were having a great time. I didn't know her, but I saw this woman across the room. She and I were just having a great time splashing around, not paying too much attention to the instructor. And my poor husband was trying to paint a palm tree. And I won't mention the instructor's name, but he came by and said, we're not painting artichokes, we're painting palm trees. So my husband looked at me and said, I'm out of here.
Oh, actually an artichoke and a palm tree are quite similar.
I think they're really
taught survival here. So he had decided through his teachings that I'm going to go back and I'm going to make the best palm tree that teacher's ever seen. And Betty's always nurtured his artwork.
Oh, he's a fabulous artist. He paints very realistically. He does beautiful work. And he did paint the best palm tree we've ever seen. And he went on, he paints boats and he paints people. He won an award from the National Orange Show in San Bernardino that he submitted a piece and the Orange Show bought his piece. It was of an orange on a beautiful blue and white plate. He's a fabulous realistic artist.
So and we entered
that
show.
Well, we didn't win anything.
So back up, you said he taught survival. So this was the determination behind him deciding that he was going to draw the best palm tree ever.
Ever. And not let the fact that he was sort of ridiculed about his beginning art and he was trying so hard.
So how did he manage it? How did he go about it?
He said he just fusses with it till he gets it right.
And how did he know when he got it right?
I think when it pleased his eye.
Cool.
And that's what we say about our work. People say, how do you know when it's finished? And Betty and I will say, we just fuss with it. And then many times we think it's finished, and the very next day we think, what were we thinking? And then we go back and a lot of our think the wonderful textures on our pieces, which are mixed media and oil, come about because there are layers and layers and layers of paintings built up until we get it to the way we want it to look.
Yeah, they say about a poem, it's never finished, just abandoned. Mm-hmm. But that point must be excruciating, sort of like when you do your hair and you think, okay, it's looking great, but there's that one hair that's out of place, and then you ruin the whole thing, you know?
Well, the working together, I know Betty tells me this, and other artists have always told me they get frustration with a piece. And I don't know, it never seems to really bother me. I think because I taught art and because we collaborate. Betty paints her paintings at her studio on her canvas, and I paint the landscape portion at my house in my studio. So I'm not going through this frustration with her necessarily. We're painting separately.
Suffering on my own.
But you're also not having to deal with each other's input. And
it never bothers me when I have a terrible painting because I always know I can paint over it.
Yes, they always say underneath every successful painting there are many failures, and that happens.
And many other paintings.
Many other paintings,
and
yes.
And I think when you teach art to junior high and high school students who are just learning about art, they are mostly frustrated when they're brand new painters. They think it's terrible. They're not happy with the work. So it's your job as their teacher to tell them, well, find a part that you like and try to work with that or crop something off.
Yes.
And you have all these solutions and you know that it's going to be better. So it doesn't seem to bother me when I have an absolutely dreadful, terrible painting because I think, well, it just has a nice textural quality now that I can paint over. And then I always know that Betty's going to come up with this beautiful figurative piece that's going to save my landscape.
In your dreams.
It's sort of counterintuitive because there's nothing else in life where you can just keep going and painting over and doing over and over and coming out with an end product. That
I don't think I've thrown a canvas away for years. I mean, I think in the beginning I did. I'd just become frustrated and they'd go to the trash, but I haven't done that for many years. I'm sanding one down now.
But there's also, you know, I did Raku at the festival in the courtyard, and it was a real lesson in letting go because you have no control
what's going to come out of the oven. Right, no.
And I think there must be an aspect to that, too, that don't you think you can't be too controlled about it? But I guess you have to be, if you've built a reputation behind something.
Well, it's pretty random. I mean, some famous artists said, once you know where it's going, you're lost, and that's kind of it. If you have too clear a vision, you're not going to get there, and then you're going to be disappointed. So it's better to be able to do kind of what Stephanie's saying. Just paint along, and then when it surprisingly develops into something you like, just acknowledge it and thank it.
Can you do that?
Oh, yes, you must thank it, yes.
That's lovely.
And go on.
I write a little bit, and I have a lot of writer friends, and it's the same thing. Some of them are just stylists, and Some do it very organically, and many of them say what you just said, that really, if you know what's going to happen at the end, then you're bored starting.
Yeah, right.
I think that's an interesting point, because we've painted collaboratively for the last 12 years, which is amazing, because that was going to be just in my mind, an experiment. So at the beginning, I think my painting was freer, because I had no idea of what Betty was going to come up with. So I was just painting freely of, well, this might work and this might not work for a duet. And then as we, 12 years later, I know we've painted literally hundreds of paintings together, hundreds. So I pretty much know her figurative pieces. I know the colors that she prefers.
You find yourself sort of adapting to Betty's needs.
We don't adapt.
We're not very adaptable.
No, I would say that's not a word that enters our relationship. What we do is we each paint separately, and then we come together, and we usually call it date night, but sometimes we just come together to chat, and we have a good relationship so we can criticize each other, which I think is most important. But we're funny because we're dancing criticizers, so it's like, well, perhaps, you know, if her hair was red, if that wouldn't offend you, then perhaps that might kind of work a little bit, you know.
That's Do you still do that? We're very polite criticism. You do, you tiptoe around.
Yes, we do.
But then we both act on it. I can't imagine you saying something to me and then just blowing it off.
Well, I do remember a time at the festival one evening. I was selling our work at the festival to a lovely couple that came by our booth. Betty was home. She had a painting of a man and a woman on her canvas, and I had a landscape, and they fell in love with the piece and the story, and it was perfect for them. And the husband says, if the woman had blonde hair, it would be perfect. They would look like us. And I said, well, maybe the woman could have blonde hair, but I have to call Betty. I do have some oil paint here, because they were traveling and they wanted to take the piece. And I said, but I'd have to call Betty and see if that was okay with her. I know she'd never know about it if I just did it, but I called her. And I said, would you mind if I gave the girl a little blonde
rinse.
Highlight hair? And she said, go for it. So she kept her paints there in the booth. So I had her little paint palette there, and I said, I can make her a blonde. And they were just thrilled.
So that is very accommodating. But so you changed the hair to fit the buyer. Was, have you ever changed a story to fit the buyer?
No.
Have done custom stories. There have been people who bought paintings before you did stories that then wrote to us or come back a few years later and then say, you didn't do a story for our painting. You'd write a story.
Yeah. So they bring the painting back and have you write a story on
it? No, they just tell her they want a story.
They come back to the festival and they said, well, we don't have it. I said, well, then you must have bought it over 10 years ago because...
You've been writing.
They say, well, could you write one? I say, sure, I could write one for it if I know the title. And I usually remember more than the visual paintings. I remember the titles of the paintings and the stories.
Unless it's unforgettable.
No, that's me. I can't remember. Oh, sorry.
So since they say they don't adapt and appear to be somewhat iconoclastic, I thought Betty was going to tell those people that that's not how it worked when you were an artist. It reminded me of recently we just had our BAFTA awards, which are the British equivalent of the Oscars, and Frances McDormand won for Three Billboards. She was wearing a very plain day dress in a kind of orange and purple print. No makeup, hair flying around as she leapt onto the stage. And she said to the audience, as you can see, I have a problem with compliance, because everyone else was dressed in black for the Me Too movement and heavily coiffed and made up. So I'd thought maybe Stephanie or Betty, who claims to be the ruder of the two, would explain to these people that you can't just adjust a painting to order. But they did adjust it, because for these two, their audience is prime. They like to give pleasure with their art, and that's more important to them than becoming famous or rich. I'm talking about Betty Hayton, Stephanie Cunningham. My guests on tonight's KX935 Share an Hour with me, Sharon James.
It has to do with age, and we're well past competitive. You know, we're not competitive painters. And so it's like whatever's going to work for our pieces. And frankly, I don't see that there's really any issue in doing a painting that it's worth arguing about. I mean, truthfully, it's a painting.
As you know. Say, there's an age where ambition doesn't enter the equation anymore, and that's actually one of the best things about growing old, isn't it?
But normally, we wouldn't alter one another. It was just one of those fluky things, you know, and I thought, why not? Let's just ask her.
She's in a silly mood.
So, I think there is no ego about, you know, people say, well, if your part's larger than her part, how do you decide this and that? And how do you decide who's going to do
what?
Who's
going to collect? They always ask that.
And I say, always make the checks to Betty Hayes.
If it, and you do half and half, right?
Yeah, we just split
even
it
if it's
half.
A quarter canvas
exactly,
and a three quarter.
Exactly. Yeah. Because if you go through the years, I mean, the variance is so great that we'd never be able to figure
it out. We never
out.
Even talked about it. Things just fell into place. Like, I'm going to order the canvas because it's easier for it to be delivered to my house than up on the hill where Betty is. She's going to get the frame materials ready because she has access. Her sister ships her old wood from Iowa.
I love the frames. We'll talk about those.
Yeah, and so Betty's in charge of that. And then
You do all the publicity
and the stories.
And you do all the interaction with humans because I can be rude.
No,
and
she
tells them to a man with a hammer, everything looks like a
deal. Exactly. I love that expression. I think maybe women are better about that in general, about just sort of accepting that you each have your role and that you're going to share equally.
Works for us. I don't know.
It was never a discussion. I do think when you're going to collaborate or be in business, work with anybody, the whole key to it is getting the right two people together. That was just the right fit for me. Somebody that I could say, you're not the boss of me.
Yeah. Respect really enters into it. I mean, because I don't have any training in art. And Stephanie has her master's in art and she taught all those years. And so I had great respect for her as an artist to begin with. She's given me an amazing amount of respect for teaching any teacher, but her abilities in particular, because that was something I really didn't appreciate or know much about, other than teachers I had in school. I didn't really understand how terribly difficult it is to be a teacher and an art teacher when you're trying to make someone produce something that they're proud of. That's very, very difficult. And right. So I had such great respect for her that goes so far into carrying a relationship.
And it's also, if you complement each other rather than match each other,
I think that's a little problem we had it kind of in the middle of our relationship, where all of a sudden we looked at our stuff and we said, it's too matchy, because we had gotten to know each other too well. So we had some conversations about that.
Yeah. Just go back to our old ways.
But having seen your paintings, mm-hmm. what amazed me is the color coordination, mm-hmm. and you don't share paints.
We don't. We use different...
And you don't even mention how you've mixed the paint, color.
Well, because I was a teacher and on a limited budget all the time, myself, and also as a teacher, you're always on a budget. I'm used to using just the basic materials. And that's another interesting story, because if you went to Betty's studio and you went to mine, you'd think, how could these people ever in a million years work together? Because she has a lovely, organized, orderly, well-stocked studio, and mine is in my laundry room, and it's just piled high and a total mess. You couldn't even get in there. So the fact is that we can work separately and enjoy our space and feel free to do what we want. So my palette, I primarily use red, yellow, blue, black, and white. But I did have to get a particular color of red, which is...
Cad red light,
because that's a color that I could not mix. I had to have that particular brand.
And they're very expensive reds, aren't they?
So how much is it?
$109. Yeah.
So I did break down and buy that. But Betty has
16 colors.
16 beautiful colors already in these beautiful tubes already mixed. Betty uses a palette knife.
I do use a palette knife. And you use glass for your palette?
We take an old piece of glass for our palette.
We both do, yeah.
But she has it all arranged and orderly and neat, and I just squirt the paint out wherever I want.
Glass.
Well, you put a piece of white paper on your table and then a piece of glass, and so that's a nice, pristine palette so that your colors look real pure.
To mix your paint.
Okay. To mix your paint on your palette, yeah. And then it's easy to clean with a razor blade, so that's kind of typical for most painters.
So I asked Betty, that's Betty Haight, who together with Stephanie Cunningham is Cunningham Haight, Laguna Beach Painters, and my guests on tonight's KX935 Share an Hour with me, Sharon James, about the framing aspect of their duet's collaboration, the beautiful decorative frames Betty hand makes to conjoin her and Stephanie's paintings.
Originally, we attempted to use lumber, wood from houses that were being torn down around Laguna. But then what's kind of happened is that now they throw those construction fences up around when there's a demolition. So it became harder and harder to get local sourcing.
It's terrible, because I'm the biggest dumpster diver in the world.
If you happen to find a little home remodel, somebody that's doing their own or something, but if you have a demolition of one of the old cottages or something, it's becoming difficult to obtain that wood. So I did have a lot of wood from the cottages that were torn down at the bottom of 3rd Street Hill. And so I used that for many years. And then when I was having trouble, I told my sister, and she is a good scrounger, and so she found some old cottages in Okoboji are home or being turned down. So for my birthday or Christmas or some occasion, there came four huge packages of wood. I mean, as long as this room, and heavy. I couldn't even lift them. This guy drops these packages of wood. She had shipped that, and I've been using that most ever since.
Are they painted wood, or is it?
It is painted wood.
And do you repaint?
Yeah. What I do is I take it, and many of the boards are too wide for our use, and so I have a friend that's an artist and a woodworker. She rips it for me into the sizes that we need, and then I take it back to the studio, and sometimes it's beautiful just as it is, and sometimes, a lot of times, at night when my palette's getting a little bit dried up and the paint really isn't so usable for a painting, then I'll just take those boards and I'll just start putting layers of this paint on it and let that dry.
You don't coordinate them with the painting, you just kind of later on
paint
something that will
match. Right, and then I have to have all sorts of different sizes, because if it's a large painting, the width of the frame would have to be bigger.
Yes.
So, you know, I have to have a lot of different inventory.
It's so important too, isn't it, framing?
It is. And then Stephanie encouraged me to do the little pieces.
Little sculptural pieces.
Yeah, the small little narrow pieces that I wrap with wire or use beads or use various things that I put on them. And then those I attach to the original frames so that they have embellishment. So they're becoming more and more sculptural as time goes on.
Do you weld?
I do weld, but I've sold, got rid of my welder and just for space.
You have a little soda?
I don't. I just do everything by hand now.
You're listening to Betty Haight, who with Stephanie Cunningham of Cunningham Haight is my guest on tonight's Sharon Hour. That's with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. Betty and Stephanie each do their own independent paintings and sell, but they've had great success with their collaborative paintings that they call duets, which they do on separate canvases and then join them together with Betty's framing. Their successful partnership has now been going on for over a decade after they showed both independently and jointly at an Iowa art show near Betty's hometown, and their collaborations flew out of there ahead of their individual paintings. Stephanie describes what happened next.
After the Iowa show, we showed at the Sawdust Festival, and we had the same thing, my wall, her wall, and the duets. And the very first week, my mom was down visiting from San Francisco, and she was sitting in the booth, you know, just to keep me company. And a gentleman came up, and he started talking and looking around, and then he said, "How about if I take all those on that wall?" I said, "What do you mean, take them?" And he said, "Well, I have a gallery in Florida, and how about you give me a deal? And I'll take them all." And I said, "I've got to call Betty. She's out playing golf."
I said, this guy
wants to take them on consignment and have a deal. And she said, "Nope, we've just had those up for like 4 days." And my mom's sitting there going like...
No, her mom was a good business person.
Don't know,
yeah,
like,
she was
nope,
a good
not
business
do that.
Person.
And I said, "No." She said, "No, what would we show on the wall if we did?" Yeah. And he had a big gallery.
Big gallery,
in Miami.
In Miami, yeah.
So I said, "Nope." She said, "Nope." And she's the boss. And then he said a few other suggestions. And then he finally said, "Okay, I'll buy them and you can leave them, mark sold on them, and leave them up for your display for the summer. And then right at the end of August, you ship them all to me and I'll pay the price for them all." He didn't offer that on my little landscape. I mean, he wanted those.
He just wanted,
he wanted the duets.
Yeah.
He did buy a couple of your large pieces. Then
I think he did. Yeah, I forgot that. That happened one other time at the Festival of Arts. One time a man came in and bought a whole wall.
Fabulous.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's pretty unusual. But
and then do you have to pay shipping and everything like that?
You have to negotiate that.
Okay.
You know, it depends.
And it's hard, isn't it, to find a good shipper?
We have a good shipper.
Well, UPS.
UPS is good.
They do, but you have to wrap it and everything?
They do it.
They do.
They had to crate in wooden crates all this stuff to go to Iowa. It was quite expensive.
It was.
Yes, for a show, of course, you're not getting anything back for the shipping, either,
right? No, unless you add it under your purchase price. But shipping's become really an issue.
I
remember that we, at the festival, there was a large piece some folks from Texas wanted, and I think the piece was like $3,000. And then when we looked into how much it cost to ship it, it was $1,000, and they wouldn't go for that.
And you have to crate it, right?
Yeah, right. Yes, UPS on a large piece won't ship without a wooden crate. Right. You know, on the smaller pieces they will.
And insure it.
And sure, yeah. So it can be quite an object, the shipping. Yeah, so it's definitely a consideration.
So we started painting smaller pieces for the festival because people did
stick them in their suitcase.
And we wanted them affordable.
We set our price 10 years ago, and our husbands are always saying, you should charge more, but we never have changed our prices because we do have many people that will say, I'm still looking for my piece, and we're always worried they'll come back and then the price will go up and be too much. They have in their head what it is.
So they have an entire picture of you.
Exactly.
With dollar with signs dollar attached. With the,
exactly, right.
And Betty demonstrates at the festival often, sits out there and paints and, several times. Some darling child will come by and love her work, and she'll just say, oh, you can take it.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, you my
know,
God.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, that's so...
It's the joy of making somebody happy.
It is, especially a kid. Any kid that's that interested in an oil painting, you know, most kids would want an airplane or a sculpture or a ice cream cone. But a kid that's interested in an oil painting, now that's pretty interesting.
Do you think the forum of the sawdust is more receptive to that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I think the sawdust is more fun and it's for kids. You know, it's more kid-oriented and has a lot of events. I always felt like kind of like a carny worker when I was at the sawdust. It has that kind of shoot from the hip atmosphere, and the festival is much more staid.
But now you've graduated the festival, and that has probably a higher reputation in terms of quality, right?
It does.
Well,
I mean,
it's a juried show rather than a lottery. A lot of the patrons that come to the shows wonder, how do you get in to this show and how do you get into that show? And we say, well, if you want to be in the sawdust, you must live in Laguna Beach and have a lottery. So that's the criteria.
So the lottery, then they just pick it out of the hat, not based on quality?
No.
Oh.
It's only based on your residency.
And it has to be made by yourself. It has to be original art.
Okay. But there's no jury. At the Festival of Arts, there is...
Rigorous jury. Yeah.
You vary. Yes. Inside and outside jurors, and you're juried in, and you can be in Orange County now.
Yeah, you don't
Orange
have to
County.
Be in Laguna. Just a quick reminder that you're tuned to The Sharon Hour with me, Sharon James, on Laguna's KX935. And my guests tonight are local Laguna Beach artists, Betty Haight and Stephanie Cunningham. They show at the Festival of the Arts. They show both independently and as collaborators with their Duets series. I asked them how they would describe their artwork, because they do a lot of overpainting and a lot of collage work, as well as melding their two styles and portraiture with landscape, how they would describe their art. And they hesitantly said, probably abstract impressionist.
When I taught art, a lot of high school and junior high school students think they just want to be an abstract artist. And I say, no, 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 you have to learn to draw before you can do it, because what some people don't realize is, what is an abstract artist? They're taking parts of something. And if you can't draw this candlestick, then you're going to be frustrated trying to do an abstract of that, because where do you start and what do you have to base it on? So I think it's very important to learn to draw.
It's like getting the grammar.
Then leaving out parts.
It's useful to be able to parse a sentence, but that doesn't mean you do it in a poem. But you have to know, as you said, what to leave out and what is essential to be in there.
We've had people come and they want to take painting lessons, and they want to be an abstract artist. And I said, that's one of the hardest, the less that's on the canvas, the harder it is to make a successful painting, because where do you start and where do you finish and what are you trying to say and how are you trying to say that?
I think that's the key. If you don't have anything to say.
Like any art form. But you don't, do you sit down to paint with intention to transmit something, or do you just...
I think you absolutely do. As you said, your figure has to have a mood.
When I think about it, what probably happens is it's probably taking my own mood, the mood when I sit down to do it, that I'm painting is probably my mood. I probably not thought about it that much, but it may well be my own mood.
Does this overpainting just relate to oils? You don't do it in watercolor, do you?
You could do it in acrylic very easily. Acrylic is a water-based paint, dries very, very quickly, but the colors can't be built up and get the textural quality as an oil paint. I suppose they could if you added some medium, but it's a more transparent look. I've painted with acrylic over collage. We both have. You've even used house paint. And
I love using house paint.
But we like to build the layers because we don't paint from subject matter. We're not looking at a photograph, or we're not out in air painting and looking at the ocean. So what we're working with is a blank canvas.
But you're more realistic, maybe, Betty, more surreal.
I think we're abstract impressionists. That's okay. What I would say. Because she paints a tree, you don't see all the leaves and all the branches. If I paint a figure, you don't see all the facial features, you might not see.
And that's a question that often people will ask. Why don't the figures on the paintings have eyes, nose, and mouth? Why aren't they there? And I say, for the very same reason my trees don't have leaves.
I didn't know you said that. That's okay.
And I say, and I can't really answer the question about the face, except that it's not a particular person.
It's impressionistic.
Yeah. It can be any person. It's a suggestion of a person, so it's not like a portrait. Because right. I would think, who would want to buy a portrait of somebody unless that was somebody they knew and wanted a portrait of? So if you put all that detail on it, it's too much. It's yeah. too much of what we're trying to say. We're trying to kind of find what you want to see.
But you're basically just relaying an emotion.
For
something.
Me, it's a lot about gesture. Posture. Yeah. I love the way people communicate. Look at how you're sitting. I mean, this mm-hmm. communicates. You're interested, you know, you're leaning forward, your arms in a friendly position. To me, posture is so important. So that's kind of where I start from when I started painting. With that, am I going to paint from the front or the back or side? And is she walking? Is she angry? We don't paint angry people. We used to. No, you know, is the person pensive? Mood, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all about mood. I love mood.
In the mood. That's it, I got it. In the mood. Your ear will spot it. In the mood. Go on a hot hit. Be alive and get the jive. You've got to learn how. Hep, hep, hep. Hep like a heifer. Pep, pep, pep. Hot as a pepper. Step, step, step. Step like a stepper. We're mugging and hugging. We're in the mood now.
Series called Odd Little Mood. These paintings are odd, you know, and so when I'm in that mood and I recognize I'm in my odd little mood, then I would do one of these paintings at the odd little mood, which are not duets. These are not pieces that Stephanie could really paint with. She couldn't put anything with odd little mood pieces. She doesn't have that mood.
So Betty is much more organized, so she does her own line of sculpting and figurative work and the duets, and is very involved with the LOCA organization. And I just sort of have a one-track mind. And so when I'm working on duets, that's what I'm working on. That's what I'm...
I mean, this is 10 years plus 12 years worth of work. I think we average like 100 paintings a year. So we've probably done close to 1,000
paintings. So 2 weeks, that's a lot.
It is, yeah.
And you paint every day?
Mm-hmm. I do something in the cause of art.
Would you say how many hours a day do you
usually? Oh, I usually go to the gym and then I'll go to the studio like at 11 o'clock and then break for lunch and then go back. Like today I went from 1 until just an hour, and then when I get home now I'll go back for another couple hours.
You will.
So usually I would say I average maybe 4 hours a day.
And yeah. Stephanie?
Not me.
She's a binge painter.
I'm a binge painter. Do you I'll go out and put a load of wash in my washing machine. And
she'll be in your jammies.
I work best when I just get out of bed. I go put a load of wash and I look out into my little workspace and I think, I'm just going to go out there for a second. And then 3 hours later, my husband will say, there's a phone call for you. I go, oh, don't disturb me. Mm-hmm. So I get in spurts. But I understand where Betty's coming from, because I used to be a runner but now walk. If I don't get that walk in, I feel like something's missing in my day, and I think you feel like...
Oh, if something keeps me out of the studio, I'm not habitable. I'm very, very grumpy.
No, and I can understand that. Does it ever piss you off, though, that you can't just leave it behind a little bit?
No, I think it's a blessing. I love it. I mean, all my friends travel, or they want to go to the shopping center or movies, but see, I have no interest in that. So my only interest, which is very limited, I understand, is my studio. You know, I may not be painting. I might decide to sculpt that day, so I might do that. Every now and then I get on this kick, I make bird sculptures, or the frames take me a long time. I fuss with all these little pieces of wood. Or tonight I'm going to have dinner with a friend and I wanted to take her something, so I had great fun wandering around the studio yesterday with the cigar box and just filling it with little Interesting treasures. That, and Claudia loved that, yeah. Little treasures, so I'm taking her a treasure box.
How lovely.
But that sort of thing, but that's what I want to be doing. I don't feel pressure about it. It's where I want to be, and anything else is pulling me out of where I want to be.
And if somebody, I don't know what the top criminal money job is, oh, somebody offered you that?
Oh, no, I'm over law, thank you. I did 28 years. And
did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah, I had a great career. I was the first woman hired in the district attorney's office in San Bernardino County. And I had a stellar career. I mean, I was allowed to do every single job, and I ended up in administration, and I couldn't have had a better career. But then I walked out the door and turned out the lights, and that was that.
Yeah.
Moved on to something else, which is where I want to be now.
We have these different life chapters. Well, this chapter, this show, the Sharon Hour on Laguna's Cakes 935, has come to an end. Thank you so much, dear Betty Haight and Stephanie Cunningham of Cunningham Haight. That's CunninghamHaight.com. If you want to see what their paintings look like, if you want to hear this show again on podcast, go to kx935.com/shows/the-Sharon-hour. That's sharing without the G, hour with the H. Meantime, this is Sharon James saying, do come back for more topics, interviews, conversations, every Sunday night at 6:00.